Hey y'all, welcome to Gadfly, the podcast about third parties, fringe candidates, and generally weird American electoral history. I'm Dusty Wilson.
And I'm Stuffed Up.
Oh no!
Udo O'Leary.
Not Snoot Snotty O'Leary. I don't know. Yes. I'm not a good bully, so I can't figure out rhyme names.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah, sorry you're still not feeling better. I know the last time we recorded you were feeling pretty whacked out, so
that was the start of it. Hopefully this is the end of it. To all our listeners out there, wash your hands and mask up.
Yeah,
big time.
Yeah, that's a good advice right there. And yeah, especially coming from, you know, negative temperature Chicago, where
you know,
we're gonna have a tropical 18 tomorrow supposedly.
Yeah.
Great, gonna go to the lake, it'll be awesome. So yeah, so we have a quick little correction corner from last week.
Oh, what are we, the New York Times?
I know, right? Just making professional fuck-ups is great. But last week we talked about the Democrats you could also vote for, who are on a number of different state ballots. On one hand, Gabriel Cornejo reached out to us, and he said he really enjoyed the episode, so that's great and fun and awesome. So thanks,
Gabe. Shout out to you, Gabriel. Thanks for listening, yeah.
The other comes courtesy of Frankie Lozada, who also seemed to like the episode, and he had some feedback on a couple of things we got wrong, mainly because I sourced it from a news article from 2019 that got shit wrong. And Frankie didn't feel the need to go and correct them. They were also the reason that I thought, it's like, are you 34? Are you going to be 34 on Inauguration Day? What the fuck's going on here? So
yeah.
I should have seen those mistakes coming. So a few things that he wanted to correct from the Long Island Herald is that his father, who had been arrested, missed his entire childhood, but he was released when Frankie was in his early 20s. So they've gotten to know each other since then.
That's great.
The other part is about the deadline for the primary for the congressional race that he was considering running. He did make the deadline, but his petitions were challenged, and he was quoted that for them to be recounted, it was going to cost him between $45,000 to $60,000, and he just didn't have the money, and he felt it would be, quote, irresponsible to pay that amount and fight a 3-day lawsuit just to have no additional campaign money to continue to be competitive.
Amen to that.
He was also drawn out of his own district. So he's now in the fourth, now includes Valley Stream where he lives, which is why he contemplated running in the fourth. But his team actually wanted him to run in the third against Santos initially.
Mm.
But it would have been outside his district. So
yeah.
Would have been a tough go either way. So Frankie, really appreciate those corrections.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And also, Long Island Herald, is it?
The Long Island Herald.
Do your job better.
Fucking seriously. Come on, man. I mean, like, I know you're not the New York Times, but have some fucking respect for yourself.
Yeah, we can't all be Judith Miller, but...
No. Ugh. Anyway, so either which way, Gabe and Frankie, best of luck coming up in New Hampshire and the various other states where you're on the ballot. Speaking of which, we had the Iowa caucuses last night.
Yeah.
Una, did you follow any of it, or did you just have a night off?
See, not only did I not do that at all, I didn't even watch the Emmys of all things.
I watched
the Bills against the Steelers.
You watched?
Hilarious.
Oh, yeah,
I watched football.
Yeah, because Buffalo, right?
Yeah, I have a connection to Buffalo.
Right. Well, I'm glad you got to watch a good game.
It was a good game.
Yeah.
It was especially good because all the Bills fans would like throw snow up in the air anytime the Bills got points.
Bills
touchdown.
Mafia is honestly like the sort of chaos that I wish all sport fan bases followed.
Yes. Just,
like, you're taking ketchup and mustard baths, you're diving into the folding tables.
Yes.
And you're just nice folk.
They're very nice. Yeah, they're very nice.
Well, I guess to fill in on that, I mean, of course, Trump won. That was to be expected. Dropping out after last night, Vivek Ramaswamy dropped out. Asa Hutchinson dropped out because no one realized he was still running for president. And he got ultra embarrassed because a relative nobody on the scene, Ryan Binkley, who is a businessman and pastor from Texas, who spent all of his money in Iowa and nowhere else, just wiped the floor with Asa Hutchinson, defeated him by 5 times as many votes. And so it was a truly hilarious spectacle. Binkley Mentum is now a thing, or he's trying to make it a thing.
He's the fetch of all of this.
Oh my God. Yes. He has enough money to maybe buy a used Toyota, or at least based off old FEC filings. Like, the money's gone. So I don't know what he's expecting to happen in New Hampshire, but it was the best thing that could have happened to him. But, you know, I guess we're going to go forward with a charade. and pretend that, Nikki Haley could win.
I mean, whatever.
Yeah, it's, and that's why we're focusing on third parties, because who knows, maybe there's other people that might make us less depressed.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sort of what we're talking about today.
Oh,
So
we're talking about less depression in general.
possibly we'll find out.
Okay.
If anything, it is a third party that is running candidates in 2024, so we'll see.
So we're on the scene.
Yeah. So, funny thing about people is we tend to get really weird about the whole concept of dying. Turns out most people don't like it, don't want to die, don't want to get old. I get it. And
I feel like aside from like a subset of a particular white woman in her 80s who's like fully embracing whatever is the Swedish custom of like death something,
I mean, all I know with that is just Midsummer and people jumping off a cliff for,
No, it's
reasons.
like they make sure they get rid of things and give
Oh,
away
yeah.
things in advance. And I'm
Aw.
saying this because I have an aunt who keeps like I keep getting like china and stuff from her,
Oh, yeah.
and it's very nice. And it's the whole idea of like you get to see the person's reaction instead of just like being dead and there's a
Yeah.
will being read.
And like burdening an executor with all your
Yes.
shit.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this fear of death, or this just dislike of death, it created a whole world of solutions that have been thought up to postpone death for as long as possible. But for some, that is not enough. What if we could, never die?
Is this about that like Silicon Valley dude who's 42 but looks really creepy?
Tangentially, yes.
Amazing. Okay,
Very
continue.
tangentially. So this desire for immortality is considered to have been first introduced in the ancient Sumerian poem, The Epic of Gilgamesh.
Very familiar with it.
Yeah, I think we all had to read it in either the last year of high school or the first year of college. So for those of you who haven't read The Epic of Gilgamesh, it was written sometime between 2100 and 1200 before the Common Era. The poem tells the story of Gilgamesh, a king who's two-thirds god and one-third man, and his Herculean adventures, where one of the major events is he meets kind of a Bigfoot-esque manible named Enkidu, and they become just the best of friends.
And the gods create Enkidu because they're looking down at Gilgamesh, who's like two-thirds arrogance, one-third humble, and is
Yeah.
like,
Yeah.
yo, stop destroying shit. Oh my God, here, we'll make you like some kind of like play date.
Right. We'll make someone be your best friend. We're
Yes.
gonna Brewster's Million a person. Wait, no, I don't know. I'm not even know if I'm naming the right movie, the right Richard Pryor movie. I might be thinking of The Toy, whatever. Either which way. So Gilgamesh and Enkidu are like best friends, but one day Enkidu grows old and dies, and it throws Gilgamesh into crisis mode, because if Enkidu can grow old and die, then Gilgamesh can grow old and die.
And the gods aren't around to be like, no, Enkidu's just on a farm in upstate Sumeria.
He's in upstate Sumeria. No! He's running around with other Enkidus,
Yeah.
doing feats of strength.
No, he's having a great time. He can't come back.
They ran out of spots to chisel for that, so that's they just couldn't get to that
Yeah,
part.
there wasn't enough wet clay for the cuneiform.
Oh my God. So Gilgamesh seeks out the counsel of a wise old person, and this person says, okay, there's a plant at the bottom of the ocean. If you get that and eat it, you can live forever. So Gilgamesh, being Gilgamesh, dives into the oceans. He actually, from what I remember, he ties stones to his feet so he can sink to the bottom and then just walk along the ocean floor until he finds this plant. And he's
You know what?
Gilgamesh, so he fucking does.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So he gets to the surface with this plant, and he thinks, all right, I don't know for sure what this plant's gonna do, so I'm gonna find an old man and have him try it first. And if he doesn't immediately die and lives forever, then I know it's for real. So, after a tough day of going to the bottom of the ocean and getting a plant, he decides he's gonna take a bath. There's a lot of sand and salt. I get it. But while he's taking a bath, a snake sneaks up and takes the plants and slithers away, and Gilgamesh is doomed to eventually die.
All because you had to stop and do a little self-care.
Now, I assume the snake is now Nessie because, it's an immortal snake being, so what else is.
Yeah.
As a consolation prize, Gilgamesh does end up becoming king of the Netherworld, but this is it's on kind of a 10th chapter that's not considered to be canon because there's a lot of contradictions to past chapters and inaccuracies. And in my academic assumption, it is one of the oldest versions of fanfic.
I was just
So
gonna say, I mean, truly, what is What is tomes of religious literature if not the first fan fiction?
Yeah. Oh, it's highly inaccurate and you wrote just what the fuck you wanted? Yeah, that deserves to be on AO3.
Done and dusted.
But since then, human history has had all kinds of examples of magical sources of immortality. The Greek historian Herodotus introduced the Fountain of Youth to the world. The Chinese alchemist Xufu sought out the elixir of life. And Zosimos of Panopolis thought up the philosopher's stone. We just don't want to die. But while all those things are works of fiction, what if I told you there was a whole realm of speculative science dedicated to vastly lengthening life, if not granting us complete and total immortality?
I'd say, sign me up.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if
To
I would.
the speculative science fiction,
Oh, okay.
not to immortality. I'm
So this
good.
speculative science is known as transhumanism.
That sounds familiar to our podcast specifically.
Yeah, it might. Yeah. The term itself was first invented by Dante Alighieri in the most boring of sequels of the Divine Comedy, Paradiso, where nothing happens and there's some creepy fucking angels, and that's literally it.
Yeah.
But at the time, there wasn't an Italian word, or would have been Latin, or would have been Italian at the
It
time.
was Italian.
It was. Okay.
Dante Alighieri like was the first to write in the vernacular
Oh,
and thus kind
wonderful.
of set the tone for what Italian would be.
Yeah. So in Italian, there really wasn't a word for what he was looking for. So he invented the word for transhumanism to define a state of moving beyond what it means to be human. And in modern usage, as Science Direct has defined it, transhumanism is, quote, the position that human beings should be permitted to use technology to modify and enhance human cognition and bodily function, expanding abilities and capacities beyond current biological constraints. And to understand this a bit more, we have to look at the father of modern transhumanist thought, British geneticist John Burdon Sanderson Haldane.
Ooh.
It's such a British fucking name. So in 1923, JBS Haldane wrote a book called Daedalus or Science in the Future, where he laid the many ideas that would become key to the transhumanist thought out to the world. Mainly that the key to extended life resided in scientific discovery and experimentation on the living body. However, he also acknowledged that the study in such experimentation would face quite a bit of moral reckoning from the public. Quote, "There's no great invention from fire to flying which has not been hailed as an insult to some god. But if every physical and chemical invention is blasphemy, every biological invention is a perversion. There is hardly one which, on first being brought to the notice of an observer from any nation which had not previously heard of their existence, would not appear to him as indecent and unnatural." Yeah, makes total sense. Now, it does kind of hit a bit of a hiccup when you note that Haldane viewed three specific sciences as potential things that could help with transhumanism. Such as one being modifying genetics before birth, ectogenesis or in vitro fertilization, and eugenics, because it's 1923, motherfuckers. It's the new science that everyone hates.
Oh,
And it's, yeah. So Haldane also made a point in his book that if we are going to be enhancing the human body with various sciences, ethics needs to keep the fuck up. Because without ethics, things are going to fall apart very quickly, and we're just going to invent new ways for people to suffer. So since then, the idea of how to reach some kind of immortality has gained all kinds of theories. You could eat all natural food. You could inject yourself with teenage blood, otherwise known as the Bathory method.
I'm
Or
sorry, what?
the Bathory method.
Oh, yes.
Jokes, 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 jokes. Or you could upload your consciousness into the cloud via some sort of blockchained AI. And yeah, as a theory, it's really, really easy to make fun of, but the idea of living forever, or at least longer than what is currently possible, it's a legit feeling that a lot of people have, and the quest to extend life can be found in everything from diets to medicines to wellness in general. Also, I feel like I need to say that transhumanism is equal parts science and philosophy, two things that I am bad at. So I'm not going to be able to cover everything about transhumanism. It is l logs upon logs upon books and thought, and I'm not going to be able to cover all of that. So if you want to
That's
learn more
no,
about it,
that's not our podcast. You
right.
can find other podcasts to dive into transhumanism.
Right. Maybe visit your local library. So that said, yes, we are a politics podcast. So this idyllic quest for immortality does, in fact, have its own third party. The Transhumanist Party was founded in 2014. To really understand it, we have to go back and look at the history of the party's founder, Zoltán István Gyurko. So, Zoltán was born in 1973 in Los Angeles, California, to a pair of Hungarian parents who illegally escaped the country to get away from communism.
Fair enough. Wait, so we're, I'm sorry, I hear transhumanists and political party, and I just assume the person that we're going to be talking about was born in like 1893 and then
No.
in 1910. Wow. But no, this is like,
This is
this person
modern as
is
fuck.
a mere 10 years older than us.
This is a person who is still alive today. Yes. I didn't realize, but I was going through the Wikipedia on transhumanism because, I'm an idiot. And apparently the 80s was like the modern resurrection of the transhumanist movement just because it was a burst in technology and all these new things are coming and you can have computers
No,
at
it was
home.
because the baby boomers like were creeping close to their 40s. That's why.
LSD is not keeping me young. I need more.
Wait, I had back surgery. Hold up.
I don't like how real this is. So Zoltán, born in 1973 in Los Angeles, as is tradition, not a lot of information out there about his pre-college life. But his Wikipedia page does mention that he played water polo in high school and was a nationally ranked swimmer.
Damn, that is not an easy sport. I see any, like, I see 5 minutes of game and I am exhausted.
I always thought water polo looked like so much fun when I was a kid, but I was never putting together that they're in 20 feet of water. I
Yeah.
always thought they were just standing on the bottom throwing balls at each other, and I was
Yeah.
like, that looks great. I would love to
Yeah.
do that.
There aren't horses beneath them keeping them
Right.
afloat.
So the thing that I'm used to is when I see claims like this, I immediately think, bullshit, these are lies. Someone's trying to invent a weird fucking history of why they're so fucking exceptional. The thing that makes Zoltán different is every single claim that comes forward can be backed up with evidence.
Oh.
This man has lived a super unique life, and he was nationally ranked as a swimmer. I wasn't able to find many records out there, but there is a Wayback Machine that has an old PDF of the 1982-83 youth rankings by the USA Swimming Organization. And Zoltán is nationally ranked for boys under 10.
Wow.
He nationally ranked 11th in the 50-meter backstroke and 6th in the 100-meter butterfly, which, for those of you who don't know what the butterfly stroke is, it is like swimming with both arms at once.
That's right.
It is, I don't know how you teach someone under the age of 10 how to do that and for them to be like, I'm gonna keep doing this.
I think you just keep an eye out for kids like you look like you have coordination skills. Get in the water.
Your core is fucked up. Get in there. But yeah, he apparently broke a lot of Southern California swim records for under 10,
Damn.
which I mean, I don't know how prestigious that is, or if they're just like, fuck, we found a 10-year-old who wants to swim. Do it, man. But yeah, supposedly he's just drawn to water very early in life.
Is it water, baby?
And in his teenage years, he does water polo. It seems like he gives up on swimming at a certain point and trades it in for surfing. Because he's in Southern
Nice.
California. Of course he's gonna get into surfing.
Hell yeah.
So after high school, Zoltán went to Columbia University in New York City in order to double major in philosophy and religion. At least that was the plan. In his freshman year, Zoltán became the weed hookup for his classmates, and I assume friends in the dorm. One night, he met up with some dudes to do a quick sale, but it all went to shit when they immediately said, "Hey, we're cops, you're under arrest."
Oh, come on.
Yep, you gotta ask them if they're cops, because legally they have to tell you, man. So, for trying to sell a pair of cops, $80 worth of 1992 weed,
You know it's just trash.
a garbage weed, he was found guilty of two felonies, possession and distribution.
No.
The cops then confiscated his Jeep and his motorcycle. He had to pay
Get
$20,000 in court costs
Oh my
and was
God.
sentenced to 1 month in prison
Holy shit.
for selling $80 of shit weed.
Can we pause on the fact that he had a Jeep and a motorcycle?
Look, he played water polo. That's not a sport that I would say salt of the earth folk typically pick up.
I mean, polo, regular polo, sure.
Right.
But they're also not the kind to have a Jeep and a motorcycle. They just have like
So
really nice.
there's not a ton out there about Zoltán's parents. Like I said, they escaped the communist regime in Hungary. Zoltán does say his uncle was like a freedom fighter against the communists and was just like
Damn.
throwing Molotov cocktails out of his apartment window at tanks and shit.
Damn.
But but he helped his brother and his wife get out of the country. And from what I read, Zoltan's father started a plastics manufacturing company and it ended up taking off. And that, I think, was the reason he was able to have such things at the age of 18 and to go to Columbia, a very expensive private school.
And good for him. Like, I'm just thinking, like, you're just trying to park a car in New York City.
Right. Like a motorcycle, I get. You can hide those.
Sure.
There's no alleys in New York City, so I mean it's a little harder, but still. But yeah, it's anyway. So he gets arrested, does a month in prison, and this ends up sticking with him for the rest of his freaking life. In an article for Reason.com, Zoltan stated, quote, "It's important to understand that becoming a felon, even for a minor nonviolent crime, is no small issue when you're 18 years old. In addition to the government taking away your voting and gun rights and forcing you to submit to random drug tests, a felony makes it extremely difficult to ever get a normal job. A criminal rap is a serious and derogatory social badge," which he's not wrong. And this was an article he wrote for Reason.com just a couple of years ago when weed was becoming legalized in multiple states. And is very much like, hey, we should all maybe be pardoned by every state for this. And also maybe the state should pay us back for the time they took from us.
Like, no, I think that's great of being able to use like any spotlight for those who have no voice
Agreed.
as a result of all of this.
Yeah, there's a lot of this where, you know, Zoltan's a very, very good writer. And he does make great use of this in his life, but there are a lot of things that he says where it's like, right on, man, fuck, this is fucking great. So in the wake of his arrest, Zoltan wasn't left with what most would consider normal options. He could go back to college, but the odds of him getting work with a philosophy degree and a felony
Oh.
aren't super great. So he leaves. He gets the two jobs he gets, one working as a pizza delivery driver and one stocking shelves of the grocery store. And for a year, he takes all the shifts that he can get until he saves up about $5,000. And he uses this to buy a 30-year-old, 25-foot sailboat called The Way. And he decides his only goal now is to take this boat and circumnavigate the world.
Holy shit. What? I mean, why not? Yeah, again, he's a water baby.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's his natural habitat. He's fine doing it. So this alone is a very daunting task. There's a wonderful documentary called Deep Water, not the horror movie, about a guy who just randomly, who fraudulently gets himself entered into an around-the-world boat race, and then it goes bad. It goes kind of weird even for the people who are good at sailing around the world alone. There's like a Frenchman who is, I think he's in first with the race. And then somewhere after going through the Straits of Magellan around the bottom part of South America, he's in the middle of the Atlantic and he just randomly decides, I'm going to start going east. And he just goes to Indonesia and just has a psych. I don't think it's a psychotic break, but it kind of is because he's been alone in a boat for a year. And he just decides, I don't want to finish this race. I just want to stay on this boat for a number more years.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's psychologically and physically daunting. But to make things even harder, the Way is an old boat. It doesn't have a working engine. It has no GPS. It does not have a stove. So for Zoltan to take this thing around the world, he's going to rely solely on wind power and a sextant.
Ooh.
So for those who don't know, a sextant is not only a great Scrabble word, it is a weird little copper device with a telescope on it where you can use it to look at the stars to navigate where to go in the ocean.
Indeed.
It's horrifying. I don't know how he did it other than the fact that he's just a water baby and he's totally fine using a sextant and he's just really fucking smart.
Listen, like the great age of discoverers centuries past, that's all they had. So, it definitely works. It's going to
Right.
work.
Yeah. It's not like he's, you know, taking divining rods and trying to figure out which way to go.
Yes.
He's using a real piece of equipment. This is really hard to use.
The computer will break. The sextant will be there.
Yeah. You get a little bit of salt water on that motherfucker. It's good. So yeah. So he loads up his boat with 500 books, all Steve Bonnet like, or Steve Bonnet like, his scuba equipment, and a couple surfboards. At some point during the trip, he also adds a paraglider. And he sets sail from Los Angeles to just try to go around the world. Over the years, he'd buy improvements for his boat, thanks to jobs that he took whenever he was at port. And one of those jobs is clearly his favorite. For about 6 months over a summer, he works as a treasure hunter in Guam.
Oh, what?
Once again, bullshit radar goes right up. But there are two things about this that help prove that it's true. For one, there are no wild exaggerations that most bullshitters would throw into it. And for two, it's all very well verified, not just by Zoltan, but by other people.
Damn, this man spent a month in prison and was and has fully carpe diemed.
It's like, you're gonna take my fucking life away, fucking fine. I belong to the ocean now. Fucking
Yes,
arrest me
I
there.
am one with the sea.
Poseidon buys skunk weed from me. Eat my dick. So he's in Guam and he joins what was known as the Pilar Project. And this in particular was a life passion of University of Florida historian Philip Masters. So Philip's in Seville, Spain. He's working on kind of a side project of learning how to learn Spanish better so he can interpret old Spanish documents.
Sick.
So he's in the archives in Seville, specifically the ones dealing with the colonization of the Indies and various adventures of that sort. And he's just kind of going through the papers, and he randomly picks up one that clearly hasn't been touched for a while. And he discovers an official inquiry for a ship that sunk called the Nuestra Señora del Pilar de Zaragoza y Santiago. And in 1690, the inquiry says that it sunk right off the coast of Guam. But not only did it sink off the coast of Guam, they said specifically where it sank. It hit the Cocos Reef, and due to the stuff on board, it sank very fucking quickly.
Oh.
As for the stuff on board, it was silver swords that were just for decoration. I assume they were the $100 katana of the time.
Yes.
Various artifacts, and somewhere between 1.5 and 2 million silver coins. Now, these coins were kept in treasure chests and used as ballast for the ship because they were
Oh
that fucking heavy.
my God.
So when the ship hit the reef, it immediately went down due to all that weight. But on the good news, literally everyone on the ship survived.
Okay.
Yeah, so the ship goes down, everyone survives. You have a
No
bunch of
hauntings.
eyewitnesses who know exactly where it is and what happened. And so Masters realizes he might be the first person since 1690 to read this.
Oh
And he decides, I need to go to fucking Guam. He forms a partnership with friends, got the salvaging rights from the government of Guam, and the only deal they had to make is that 25% of whatever they find has to go to the Guamanian government. And
Fair.
so in 1991, he starts searching for the treasure. Now, I did kind of gloss over how much 1.5 to 2 million silver coins is worth. In 1991, it was quoted as being well over $1 billion worth of silver,
Damn.
which in today's money is $2.2 billion.
Just to keep it 100 here.
Just sitting in water that is estimated to be between 35 to 80 feet deep.
That's it?
So technically very easy to dive in. So Philip ended up finding that there were a couple of issues with this.
Was going to say, because letter inquiry or not, if this just seems too easy, like surely in those centuries someone would have found it.
Yeah, you would think. Of the modern issues that were going on, for one, the sea is far too choppy and dangerous due to typhoon season half the year, so they could only salvage the wreck during the summer. Two, sharks, many sharks, lots of bunch of sharks. And three, diving between 35 to 80 feet can be kind of daunting because you end up getting a little too overconfident at times. So you have a lot of people who end up getting the bends and
Ugh.
don't, yeah, they don't really recalibrate on the way up, or they stay under for too long. During the summer that Zoltan was there, just weeks prior, a diver had to be medevaced out of there to a hospital and ended
Oh my
up dying.
God, truly one of my nightmares.
Yeah. So Zoltan, he goes into port at Guam. He's in a boat shop, and a guy randomly asks him if he knows how to scuba dive, to which he says, yeah, I do. And the guy says, great, I need an extra person on my scuba team. It pays twice the minimum wage. And Zoltan, knowing a good deal when he sees it, says, sign me the fuck up. He says for the entire summer, they are working about 12-hour shifts for 5 days a week, doing anywhere between 4 to 5 dives a day, trying to
Wow.
find this fucking shipwreck. And the thing is, by the time the Zoltan gets out there, they have found plenty of proof that the Pilar was here off the reef. They have found cannonballs, they found pins, they have found artifacts. They found about 36 silver coins that they're still using to pay the divers each year.
Oh
Like just
my God.
a little taste of silver as it goes. So Zoltan ends up doing about 400 dives, and he has a picture of the one time that he found something. And it's just a picture of him underwater holding a tiny little duckshot cannonball in his hand.
Cute.
That's all he found was
No,
one cannonball,
oh.
which also leads me to thoroughly believe even more it's true because A, there's pictures, and B, he's not exaggerating some weird fucking story. It's a
Yeah.
hilariously humble story of just rooking a treasure hunting expedition for a summer.
God, what I'd give to be 20 and in 1991 scuba certification.
So I do have sad news on that. Philip Masters would end up dying around 2007, if I remember right. They never found the treasure. It was just gone. It's probably under the sand. They can't get to it. Or like you said, some sailors probably went the fuck back when they could and just scooped up as much as they can. I mean, I don't know how good
And
diving was back then. Like if you could just dive into the ocean, get 80 feet under, scoop up some silver and swim back. I'm not sure what dive technology even was then. Or if they're just like send a bucket down.
right.
But yeah, so he ends up dying. The silver coins never got found. They found a
Damn.
fuck ton of artifacts though. So at least
That's pretty
historically
cool.
it was a very important, it was more of an expedition than a treasure hunt in the end. It's great for archaeological reasons. So once that summer job was up, Zoltan spent the next year finishing his exploration of the Pacific Ocean and moved on to the Indian Ocean. By this point, his adventure was beginning to catch media attention. And instead of having to take jobs at port, he began writing articles for boating magazine. And it turns out
Ooh.
he was pretty good at writing.
Yeah, man. He went to Columbia.
Yeah,
He got
I mean,
in.
he's
He's no slouch.
extraordinarily well read. So, you know, he's got all the tools for it. He has all the time in the world to write when he's not, you know, surviving an ocean. Anyway, so I'm not sure when or how, but in 1998, he also returned to Columbia and got his bachelor's in philosophy. So I
Hey.
don't know how that works with circumnavigation. If you can just like pull into Singapore, fly back to Columbia, finish your classes, and then fly back to Singapore and start all over again. I don't know the rules.
He found a loophole somehow with those semesters at sea.
Yeah. In the 2000s, he continued sailing through the Indian Ocean and picked up a new gig working as a freelance reporter for National Geographic.
So
His
cool.
articles focused on such topics as the increase in tourism of the Cambodian killing fields, the
Ooh.
dangers of professional rodeo bull riding, and he even made a few video segments for the National Geographic channel. Also, on top of this, he was doing a bit of photography and sold his photographs to the New York Times.
Holy cow.
Yeah, he becomes a legit journalist while at sea. And in one of his segments on National Geographic, he makes a bit of a bold claim in that he has invented a new extreme sport, volcano boarding.
No.
So Zoltan claims in 1995, he dropped anchor off the island of Vanuatu. And while there, he visited Mount Yasur, a highly active volcano covered in pyroclastic rocks and volcano ash. And despite the volcano erupting, quote, several times an hour, it can be approached relatively safely and climbed pretty easily. You just gotta watch out for, you know, the earth shaking and any lava that might show up. And so after he climbed it, he noticed that the accumulated volcanic ash was similar in consistency to sand dunes. So on one of his trips, he brought a wood plank with him and he essentially snowboarded his way down the mountain.
Oh, okay, but it's like the recently cooled
Right. He's not
and right.
boarding
Okay.
on lava. He is, I mean,
Okay, but
technically
that's
supposed
what I thought.
Yeah. No, he is riding volcanic ash, which even if you fall down, that shit is going to cut you to fucking pieces. So it is heavily dangerous. But of course, I thought to myself, you're not the first person to show up to Vanuatu. People have been living there for, I don't know, centuries, millennia. Surely someone else has invented this dumb fucking idea. The closest I could find is an ancient Hawaiian sport called heiahuluwa, or lava sledding. And this is done on rocks via a wooden sled with ruts carved into the rocks. So it's a lot more like bobsledding on rocks than it is snowboarding on ash.
Okay. I mean, not my cup of tea, but hey, that's, to each their own.
There are people who are doing it nowadays, and it looks like they're doing it on grassy hillsides rather than volcanic rock. So,
Huge
you know,
improvement.
gigantic improvement. And so, yeah, I mean, they're just different enough that it's like, yeah, Zoltan, I'll give that to you, man. You've invented
Damn.
volcano boarding, an
Damn.
extreme sport that supposedly can only be done on three volcanoes in the entire world, just because there are only three that have the perfect conditions for it.
Well, all the same, I better fucking see it for Paris 2024 Olympics.
First, you need to build a volcano or
Yeah.
import a bunch of pumice stone and just be cool with people dying. So at this point, the goal of circumnavigation seems to have become less and less important. And in 2004, Zoltan ended his attempt somewhere in the Mediterranean Sea. So he ends up doing what any person would do after years at sea. He buys a vineyard. He buys a vineyard in the region of Mendoza in Argentina, which is well known for being one of the best places in the world to grow Malbec.
Mm.
So Zoltan bought a piece of land where there were 80-year-old Malbec vines. He plants more Malbec, a bit of Cabernet Sauvignon, and a bunch of olive trees for good measure. Now, this is where most people would absolutely fuck up their life. Because as the old joke goes, how does a billionaire become a millionaire? He buys a vineyard. And yeah, and so the mistake people typically make is they're like, I bought a vineyard. I'm going to make my own wine. I'm going to ferment it. I'm going to have the bottling process. I'm going to advertise it. I'm going to sell it. I'm going to be a fucking bajillionaire. Zoltan does the smart thing and he decides, I'm doing none of that. I'm selling these grapes to people who want to make wine and I'm out.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I'm not bothering with the graphic designs of the label.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to rub shoulders with Francis Ford Coppola.
Right, right.
Here are the grapes. Get the fuck going.
Exactly. It's exactly what the America famous Two Buck Chuck did or continues to do, is they find vineyards that are selling shit grapes for barely anything and then make wine that's $2 a bottle.
I'm more disappointed with the fact that after living of the sea and then buying a vineyard, which would allow him to like really connect with the terroir and mm-hmm. the earth, it seems like he's more like, no, I just bought a vineyard. Like,
oh,
whatever.
No, he does not stay. He doesn't move to Argentina. He's not like living in Mendoza for the rest of his life. He buys a vineyard, tells him to just sell the grapes. This is workless capital. It's just free money coming in. Let everyone handle it and I'm done. So what he does do is he ends up settling in San Francisco between 2004 and 2013. And during this history, it's fairly uneventful. He claims that he started a rock band with a friend, but nothing really came of it. And he also alludes that this is when he started to get into real estate, which around the Bay Area is just printing money.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's really not that much info, which is really weird on his website because his website is just plastered with information. Details abounding. So for nearly a decade, he led what seems to be a very quiet and highly successful life outside the public eye. That is, until the publication of his first book. You see, in 1999, while Zoltan was at sea, he got himself a literary agent somehow.
I mean, yeah, he's been writing all those articles,
right.
Getting press that way. Makes sense.
And so he wants to write a fiction. And his literary agent...
don't we all?
Right. So his literary agent's pitching him to all these different publishing houses, but no one bites. He just gives up on it for a while. But the yearning to be a novelist is still there. So in 2013, he self-publishes his first work, The Transhumanist Wager. The book was about Jethro Knights, a globe-trotting photographer who seeks out immortality. And he establishes his own floating nation called Transhumania. However, everything goes wrong when the world realizes what he's doing, that he's trying to get rid of death, and we can't have that. So the entire world declares war against Transhumania.
I mean, I smell a little self-insert there, but...
You think?
A little self-insert by way of Ayn Rand.
So, it's funny you bring that up, because this is the first part where Zoltan kind of fibs a little bit. He makes it look like there are multiple reviews of his book, when in reality, the majority are just mentions of his book in future articles. The New York Times does not give a very good review of it, but he mentions it. They're like, it's an unwieldy story. And he's like, yeah, it's an unwieldy story. No, that's not good.
I appreciate that, though.
Like, Zoltan, you read books. You know this isn't good. But, you know, he mentions it anyway. And he starts to get attention from Fox News because suddenly the book is number one on Amazon in the philosophy category.
Oh,
and
no.
It ends up hitting number five overall.
Oh, boy.
And so the one thing that people mainly say is this: the book feels like a manifesto. And if there's anything we're going to compare it to, it's probably Atlas Shrugged.
Boom.
Which is probably a good enough segue to talk about libertarian transhumanism. I'm sorry. I truly am. I didn't know that this was where we were going when I started this.
You did it! You did it!
Nope.
Smart boy lives on his own for too long and then moves to the Bay Area in 2004. You didn't sniff it out, Dusty!
Look, he's been subsistent by himself for a number of years by the sweat of his own brow. I thought he was a Marxist. When you say it like that, I feel like a complete fucking idiot, especially after doing this podcast for 4 fucking years. I should goddamn realize what's coming. I didn't. I'm blindsided by this.
And now we're here. Fine.
He volcano boarded. What the fuck was I supposed to expect?
He's seems so honest otherwise. I was duped.
It's not like Tony Hawk's gonna like go on Cribs and draw off his Ayn Rand poster. This isn't my fucking story, man. So, all right. So we got to talk about ever so briefly libertarian transhumanism. Basic gist is it's my body and I should be allowed to do with it whatever I want so long as no one else gets hurt. And this gonna be things like, you know, human augmentation. I should be allowed to be a cyborg. I should be allowed to modify my genetics. I should be allowed to upload my brain to the internet. And the best thing about this that I can say is it's probably the best libertarian theory to support the trans community.
Yeah, I can see that. And of course, it gets squishy, of course, with the whole I can do whatever I want to my body so long as I don't hurt anybody. Because of course you think yes, I as a woman should have bodily autonomy. And if it takes an abortion to save my life, I should be able to have that abortion. And it always is great until you get the libertarian guy who's like, but that's also going to be my kid, and now my feelings are hurt.
And
And
this
also,
is why you gotta marry a classic libertarian who would just be like, fuck yeah, abortion, go fucking do it, man.
yeah,
But
they're
not these
never
fucking
like
Mises
that.
caucus weirdos who will absolutely say that shit. That child is my property and you are infringing on the free market. And
Oh my God.
anyway, so yeah, and so that's at least the general idea behind libertarian transhumanism. But it does also have its own fair share of strong criticism against. The one that resonated most with me came from Richard Barbrook, who, to quote Wikipedia, claims that this political philosophy results in, quote, a subculture of selfishness, elitism, and escapism. Which is a really good point because I can see the escapism because the science really isn't there right now. And so you might be more focused on your own life getting longer instead of things that are more scientifically possible. Absolutely elitism, because it's not like you and I can buy cybernetics and live to be 300. It's, you know, we've read the summary of the movie Elysium, directed by District 9 auteur Neil Blomkamp. Obviously, we saw Matt Damon's finest work. And selfishness makes sense too, because it's, you know, I mean, it's objectivism, which is the Ayn Rand theory that the best thing you could ever be in life is selfish.
Yeah, and aren't the promoters of this transhuman libertarianism mostly Gen Xers? I would also use those three words to describe a lot
I
of the
think
Gen
it's
X
absolutely
guys.
people who are way too into cyberpunk in general. They're like
I
into it
don't.
as more than just, you know, playing Shadowrun and really love it. It's probably people who like cyberpunk more than the aesthetics. It's people who severely want to live in Blade Runner and see no problems with that.
I mean, I also just like my, and to the point of this one critic, my immediate concern is okay, cool, you want to augment your body, you want a forked tongue, you want to do weird, what doctor is going to do that aside from Dr. Nick from The Simpsons?
Yeah, the underground cybernetic. Well, I mean, I imagine the theory goes that if these are things that are now legal, an economy will develop around doing these procedures. And the free market being what it is in libertarian theory, people who are good at it will rise to the top and become the people that you rely on to do that.
Got it.
In the
Right.
highly optimistic view of this.
Yes. And
Because,
you'll pay top dollar and they'll be at a tattoo shop.
exactly, yeah. It's like I've said forever, my biggest problem with libertarianism is it's far too optimistic about human nature and how things will go.
Yeah. From the most pissy, pessimistic people you've ever met in your real life.
I mean, I'm not going to say not all libertarians, but I get your point.
You know what? You're right. You're right. I cast a wide net over our
As an Ayn Rand
libertarianism.
libertarian, yes, Ayn Rand is not looking on the bright side of life for anything, but yes. And yeah, and so I think it's a really solid question. And another question that really comes up with the selfishness is like, well, what happens if everyone can live forever and we just keep making people?
Right.
Like, what's going to happen to the world? And
There's not enough phosphorus to keep those farmlands going.
well, and a lot of them are also very huge proponents of space travel. So there at least is kind of a plan where it's like, there's too many people. We need to have colonies on Mars or the moon or Titan. Or any other celestial body that can kind of sort of host human life. Anyway, so now that that's out of the way, the more important thing that the transhumanist wager introduced was Zoltan's three laws of transhumanism. One, a transhumanist must safeguard one's own existence above all else. Oh, that face didn't look happy. That looked like an angry face.
In every measure of life, put the mask on your face before assisting others.
Two, a transhumanist must strive to achieve omnipotence as expediently as possible, so long as one's actions do not conflict with the first law.
Dude, I'm still trying to learn French, man. Like,
No, you gotta be fucking
God.
omnipotent. You gotta put in that like French disc into your fucking head, along with all the other languages. Just learn them
You
all.
know what? I want to,
Be
Dusty.
omnipotent, you cuck. And three, a transhumanist must safeguard value in the universe, so long as one's actions do not conflict with the first and second laws.
But what it what how are we defining value?
Citation needed.
Yeah, there it is.
I mean, if I had to make a guess, I just based on stuff that Zoltan's written, I think it's mostly just ensuring human existence and well, I mean, beyond human existence, extraterrestrial existence, robotic existence, and like preparing for things like disease or asteroids or any sort of imminent danger.
Oh, okay.
If I had to make a guess, but like I said, the book did well on Amazon, and Zoltan seems to have used those funds, or at least some of those funds, to purchase a second vineyard. This one is in the Entre-deux-Mers region of Bordeaux, France.
Ooh.
In this vineyard in particular, only grows Sauvignon Gris, which, if you haven't heard of that grape, very few. It's not a popular grape on its own. It kind of sucks, which is probably why he was able to purchase a plot of land in Bordeaux.
Tracks.
So I'm just going to talk about this because wine is one of the few things I feel comfortable talking about in the world of transhumanism and philosophy and shit. So in France has a fuck ton of laws about how you can label wine or what you're allowed to call it. It's the closest thing we have to that in America is like bourbon can only be made in Kentucky and it has to be made of corn, unless it's fucking Jack Daniels, then you can make it in Tennessee and no one gives a shit. But in France, each region has their own rules and each sub-region has their own rules. And in Entre-deux-Mers, Sauvignon Gris can never have the words Entre-deux-Mers on the label. It's pretty much just like French wine. It's just table wine.
We reject this bastard child.
100%. Just because they know it can never be good enough to actually make the region look good. So what the wine, what Sauvignon Gris is used for predominantly is just mixing into white blends.
Oh,
And
sure,
so
just
one
like f some filler.
Right. And so what Zoltan does is exactly what he does in Mendoza, is he just sells the grapes and doesn't
Boom.
have to worry about bottling or French wine laws aside from growing it and making it. Brilliant. Fucking hate it. It's just brilliant. And the reason I hate it is I'm jealous. I'm super fucking
Right,
jealous.
yeah, there it
It's
is.
pure jealousy, Zoltan. That's all it fucking is. So for the next couple of years, Zoltan lives off sales of his book, grapes, and real estate. But he also found himself now the go-to voice on transhumanism, which honestly is about the most perfect time to build an entire third party around the subject. And since Zoltan is the name behind the movement, he'd probably also be the one to run for president in 2016.
Hell yeah.
So I'm going to say this from the jump. Zoltan does not think he can win. So just keep that in
Okay,
mind as we talk
I
about it.
appreciate that.
Yeah. He does not think he can win. There's no scenario in which he knows he will win. All he cares about is getting more and more people to learn about transhumanism, and if he's lucky, to really love it and want to support it. But the thing is, you can't run for president without some really cool fucking wheels. In the summer of 2015, Zoltan makes an Indiegogo page to raise money for what he dubs the Immortality Bus. Now, I'm going to send you a picture of the Immortality Bus. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. So, this is very clearly a staged photo, which makes it, I think, all the better. Right. So, the Immortality Bus is a kind of an older looking brown bus, but it's been modified to look like a coffin.
It looks, yeah, and it looks like a bus and a tank from World War One came
Yeah.
together.
It's a hardy bus. Like, it's going to take
Yes.
a lot to fix this bus, but then it's going to take a lot to break it. So he goes on to Indiegogo with the whole thing of fixing up this bus and using it for his campaign. Quote, "The Immortality Bus is a pro-science symbol of resistance against aging and death. Join our scientists, robots, and activists as we use our mobile 40-foot coffin to ignite the next great civil rights debate in America and around the world." When he says robot, there's a 4-foot robot on that bus that's traveling with him.
What?
Yeah, because he likes robots. You know, when the singularity hits, they're gonna be thinking just like people, so you better treat them well now.
This is getting closer and closer to an 80s sitcom.
Zoltan states that the bus will make a cross-country trip to spread the word of transhumanism and call out the quote, 100% religious people in charge who refuse to seek a cure to death due to their belief in an afterlife.
I mean, sure. I say annoy the Catholics at any and all possible times.
You know, with the genocide that's currently going on now, the reason that you get a lot of evangelical Christians supporting what's happening is because war in Israel is a sign that Jesus is coming back, which means you get to die, which means you get to go to heaven. And so when he says, like, you know, I'm calling out the religious people who refuse to cure death, that's the first thing I think, is that people absolutely have, you know, an optimistic view of what happens after you die,
Yeah.
which, you know, no one can prove or disprove, but.
But in the here and the now also means certain carelessness regarding environmental impacts one might make because fuck it, we're about to be with Jesus.
You know, it reminds me of two things. One, Lord of the Rings, where the elves are irritated because they have to live longer and deal with man's choices.
Gosh.
But also, I don't know if you read, you know, being a guy who was, you know, young in the early 2000s, I had a Chuck Palahniuk phase.
Sure.
And I read Haunted, which is, I feel like I need to go back to that thing. I might not enjoy it as much as I did. But there is a short story in Haunted called Obsolete, about the government getting verifiable proof that heaven is on Venus. And like it was just described as incontrovertible proof that when you die, you go to Venus and live forever. And so the government's like, all right, everyone die, everyone get ready to kill yourself.
Oh my God.
And yeah, and so that's immediately what I thought of when he was like, you know, everyone's ready to die. Everyone wants to live in heaven because heaven sounds fucking great because you can kind of define what you want it to be. And of course, we're all going to heaven. You know, as the Pope says, I hope hell's empty,
Oh,
which is, you know, a wonderful thought, but all, you know, I it might be
ignores
a.
the fact that Henry Kissinger just
Right. Also, if hell's empty, where's Satan? Here's me trying to get in a fight with Pope Francis for some reason. Anyway, so you know, he makes a lot of points that he just seems like a fun guy to talk about this because that it's a solid point that I think he's making.
I'm just curious of like the counterpoint to all that, and not trying to be a whole like debate me like
Yeah.
online narc about it, but genuinely of like because I hope with like the whole I should be able to do what I want with my body is I think there is something to a lot of death care, the idea of like actually like suicide should not be made illegal. Like I don't think it should be cons I get why, but I don't think it should be considered like the cardinal mortal sin that it is. And in fact, for people who are very much in pain and like recognize that they are at the end of their life, and want to greet that with family and friends around them and in a way that's, humanizing. I where does that fit in with the whole immortality?
I mean, we'll kind of get to that, but
Oh, okay, cool.
so by August of 2015, Zoltan's able to raise $27,000 and the immortality bus began its cross-country tour. So Zoltan makes a few interesting stops along the way. The day after they start in San Francisco, they end up at Grindfest, which is a biohacker and human augmentation convention in Tehachapi, California.
You don't need to tell me what it is, Dusty. I'm well aware of
Are you a
Grind
grinder?
Fest.
You're a long-term grinder?
I'm a grinder.
So when Zoltan gets there, apparently everyone in the bus is talking about what they're going to do. And one of the things that you can do when you get there is you could get a chip implanted in your hand. It's a simple RFID chip that's the same sort of chip that people use for remoteless entry for their cars.
Oh,
And the
okay.
idea is you get this chip and anything you wave your hand in front of works if it recognizes this chip. And so Zoltan gets one put in his hand. And so everyone's kind of testing it out. One person actually can open other people's cars with it, which I find fucking great.
That's hilarious.
Zoltan's doesn't seem to do much of anything. He was really hoping he could get it connected to the robot in the immortality van and dip to work the robot. There's no indication that happened. A lot of this comes from Zoltan himself or articles that he wrote. Another option that you could get at Grindfest, apparently, is people were getting the tips of their fingers cut open and small magnets put in so they can have a sixth sense of metals around them.
Wanking motion, but fine. It's it's a fun party trick. Like,
Yeah, you
have
do
fun.
you.
Yeah, exactly.
I assume it's removable if you get tired of it.
Yeah.
Whatever. So a month later, he makes a stop that I find to be highly questionable for multiple reasons. He goes to Austin, Texas. He is an hour-long guest on InfoWars with Alex Jones. So he here, I, for one, he's on InfoWars, which is already a highly questionable thing. Two, I've listened to enough Knowledge Fight to know that in the top three things that Alex Jones hates the most, it's communists, young progressive people, and transhumanists.
Really?
When Zoltan is talking about religious people who don't want to cure death, he's talking about Alex Jones because he
Oh.
views transhumanism as the ultimate destruction of the soul. Like you are a ship of Theseusing your soul piece by piece until you are more robot than man and you will not be able to get into heaven. Also, Mark of the Beast kind of stuff works with that because you're getting a chip or an implant or some sort of barcode. There are a lot of things that go hand in hand with evangelical Christianity and hating transhumanism.
This is incredible. All right.
I didn't listen to it because I've heard Alex yell at people more than enough times to really care.
Yeah.
But Zoltan does note that it was from that one appearance on the show that he got the most hate mail sent to him. So
Yeah.
he seems to be good-natured about it, but it's still like, yeah, that was, what did you think would happen?
Yeah, man.
I
Lie
mean,
with
good on you
dogs,
for
wake up with
trying.
fleas.
Right. It's, Knowledge Fight's been talking recently about how, there Alex Jones did a debate on X or something like that, or whatever the hell. And they're a huge thing is like, don't debate him. He's not a man you can debate. He will yell at you, he'll change the subject. There is nothing there to debate. So the best thing you could do is not go, even if you think you might be able to pull one or two from his audience.
Nope.
They won't listen to you. They do not care if they're already listening to him.
Nope. And in the meantime, guess what? You're doxxed.
Right,
Great job.
right. They are sending hate mail to the fucking bus that you Indiegogo'd. So by mid-December, the Immortality bus pulls into Washington, D.C., and Zoltan makes his way to the Capitol building. And to an audience of about five people, he introduced the bedrock of his political campaign, the Transhumanist Bill of Rights. So there are six articles to it, so I'm gonna skim a lot. But I think the preamble is probably the important way to start. Whereas science and technology are now radically changing human beings and may also create future forms of advanced sapient and sentient life, transhumanists establish this transhumanist Bill of Rights to help guide and enact sensible policies in the pursuit of life, liberty, security of person, and happiness. Article 1, human beings, sentient AI, cyborgs, and other advanced sapient life forms are entitled to universal rights of ending involuntary suffering, making personhood improvements, and achieving an indefinite lifespan via science and technology. So I do want to point out a small thing here. The American Bar Association kind of agrees with this a little bit and have put out a platform somewhat agreeing with this. When cloning was a thing, they started questioning whether or not clones would have the same rights as humans, and they
Oh.
decided yes, if there's ever a cloned human, they will have the same rights as a person, or we will fight for that.
Yeah, let's just get out ahead of this.
Right. And so I view this very much as Zoltan doing the same thing. If we ever have, if we ever pass the singularity and AI is capable of independent thought, if there are cyborgs or robots or any sort of sentient life, then yeah, they deserve the same rights that we have.
Does Citizens United, does a corporation fall under this?
No,
Article
no, it doesn't.
one.
Unless it's an AI, then no. I mean, oh my God, that's a good question. If an AI forms a company, does it have extra rights?
And the next thing you know, it's got a super PAC running.
Oh my God, this is a whole kettle of fish. God damn it. Let me see here, because some of this repeats, at least it somewhat repeats in certain ways. Under penalty of law, no cultural, ethnic, or religious perspectives influencing government policy can impede life extension science, the health of the public, or the possible maximum amount of life hours citizens possess. Steer. Oh, human beings, sentient AI, cyborgs, and other advanced sapient life forms will take every reasonable precaution to prevent existential risk, including those of rogue AI, asteroids, plagues, weapons of mass destruction, bioterrorism, war, and global warming, among others. Like I said, when you go back to the transhumanist, the three laws of transhumanism, I think that covers the third law of what you're
Sure,
trying to
yeah.
sustain. Oh, and all nations and their governments will take reasonable measures to embrace and fund space travel, not only for the spirit of adventure and to gain knowledge by exploring the universe, but as an ultimate safeguard to its citizens and transhumanity should planet Earth become uninhabitable or be destroyed. And then Article 6, which kind of loses me a little bit. Involuntary aging shall be classified as a disease. All nations and their governments will actively seek to dramatically extend the lives and improve the health of its citizens by offering them scientific and medical technologies to overcome involuntary aging.
I'm going to quote one of our good friends who always mentions it's a blessing to grow old.
Right. It's involuntary aging. I don't know why, as a phrase, it hits me so wrong.
Because
Because at
we're
all times,
40.
we're aging. Like,
Yeah.
even if we're extending life, we're still getting old. You're not reversing your age. Even if you're taking stuff that's like making you feel younger, you're still getting fucking older. Elves don't say, you know, I'm 600, but I feel 20. Yeah, it hits really weird that aging is a disease, because then it makes the entire populace diseased.
I mean,
Like, you're diseased from birth, it loses definition.
it's hard to be a woman and not just like feel this personally of like, yeah, no, society has been telling me I've been involuntarily aging since 20, since 25. Like, I became invisible to society when I hit 30. That's a fact. So it's just such a dude thing of like, you hit 50 and then you have a midlife crisis and you dye your hair and it goes bad and you buy a Corvette.
Or you start injecting yourself the blood of young.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no
I
it's
also like the way that we keep talking about with the extreme optimism of a lot of libertarian rationalization and efforts of like, I hear involuntary aging will be considered an illness, and like the government should be able to do its part to keep you from involuntarily aging. I'm like, so you're keeping me from retiring. Like, that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing
Ooh.
corporations being
Yep.
like, no, you can keep working.
Yeah, we gave you that serum so your bones don't break. Here's
Yeah.
we exchanged your calcium with metal. Have fun.
Like, again, this is peak, like, you know, five people in the world get to enjoy their whole life as a life of leisure, and then the rest of us are just absolute drones.
Excellent. So, using the Bill of Rights as the bedrock of his campaign, the rest of the platform included 19 other policies that are mostly ideas without plans. So, I'm only going to cover the ones that are a little more clear about what they would do. Number 5, implement a policy for the phasing out of all individual taxes based on robots taking most jobs in the next 25 years.
Hey, but then what?
Well, you're not asking the right question. How do we phase it out? Flat tax.
Again, the taxing isn't adding up to a revenue source.
Also, if we are going to make robots work and they have
Yeah.
sentience, this isn't going to work long term. They're eventually going to form unions.
Right,
It's like,
because as per Article One, they have rights.
right? They're going to want to get paid. I don't know what robots will buy, but they will. Like, you've given them free fucking will. God damn it. 7, implement ranked choice voting. You know, I can
Sure.
support
Yeah.
that.
Okay.
8, end the war on drugs by legalizing all drugs, which, I mean, fits into bodily autonomy, so I get it.
Sure.
9, create a government where all politicians' original professions are represented equally. He makes the point that the government should not be run by 40% lawyers when lawyers represent less than 10% of the country's jobs. Now, I told you we had to start a little late because I was doing petty math. This is
Yeah.
what I was doing.
Oh,
Because when I
throw me with
read
some
that, I
petty
was like,
math.
because initially when I read that, I was like, okay, I guess that makes sense. I could see that as like, you know, we should represent all people across the board. And then I started looking into the numbers and realized that what he is postulating is impossible nonsense bullshit. So I went to the U.S. Department of Labor and I was like, hey, what is the job that most people have? And that job would be retail clerk. 2.3% of the American working workforce are retail. And when you put that to the 438 seats in Congress, that means 10 of them should be retail clerks. And this gets a little, you know, it'd be, I think that's a huge improvement. Getting low-income people making decisions and making laws, yeah, that's probably going to improve a lot of things in this country. But then you start to gotta ask, all right, how does this cascade? Because when
Yeah.
you start looking at other jobs, only one other job gets 10 seats, and that's in-home nursing care and like home
Okay.
health aides. After that, it precipitously drops off. You have to go through 179 jobs before the percentage of people doing that job becomes statistically impossible to round up to equal one seat.
Oh.
And even then, you're at 401 seats. There are still 37 seats that cannot be filled by jobs because statistically it can't be done.
This is extremely petty math. I am so here for it.
Also, attorneys count for 0.5% of the workforce in America. They would get one seat in Congress. But I'm gonna get pettier because how the fuck do you actually do this? Does each congressional district, do you go to them and say, hey, you have to elect a janitor, or you have to elect a server, or you have to elect a truck driver? And after that, your job title changes to congressman. And there's no way in fuck congressman's going to get put into that, because 438 people is a statistically irrelevant number of people in the workforce to be reelected. Like, it's madness and bullshit and makes no sense and completely decimates voting rights. It's one of those ideas that if I were high in a room, it would sound fucking great. But the second you do the math, it falls the fuck apart. Ugh. This is the part where I start to get mad as old time. So
I mean, so yeah, because really what he's after is like we should have more class diversity.
right. If he just said that, then fuck yeah, let's run with that. I still have trouble when it comes to like, okay, how are we going to figure out who gets voted in? You know, I'm sure we could figure it out somehow, but the way that you're saying it right now is it would drive people mad. Steve Kornacki would just shoot himself to the moon.
But again, it's like, okay, so it's like dig deeper. What's the note behind the note? Well, that like there shouldn't be so much dark money going into certain campaigns for people who have like, but then also it's like I don't think there's anything wrong with like working your way up from like state ledge to state senate
Oh my
to
God, that would
representative.
absolutely kill that pipeline too.
Right. And
Yeah.
it's like you know what? I prefer if someone is going into a job knowing what is required of that job. Because the other thing is like it doesn't take long before you think like, yeah, we should have more representation from like from daycare centers and teachers and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, sure, because at one end you have AOC, who was a bartender, but has a BA in political science, so isn't a total noob at this. But then at the other end, you have Marjorie Taylor Greene, who was like a CrossFit instructor and is like a terrible human being and doesn't know basic law. Like, you could end up with either. But I
Exactly,
think
yeah.
you're more likely to end up with a Marjorie Taylor Greene, quite frankly,
Yeah.
rather than a Cori Bush.
Yeah, it's wild. Oh, 12. Due to robots taking all the jobs, implement universal basic income. But if robots
Okay.
have the same rights as humans, how are robots not getting universal basic income also?
Could you just give me universal basic income?
Right. Also, I
Do
think
we
you're
need the
being very
robots?
optimistic about the robots taking all the jobs. Like,
Yeah.
I don't think a robot's going to be, you know, writing the next season of Abbott Elementary.
I want that job.
Yeah, I
Like,
don't
do
think a
I?
robot's going to be a social worker. It's not.
Yeah, no.
There are certain things that people just kind of got to do. 14, though, I think is really rad. Create the Transhumanist Olympics. Yeah, I can't remember who joked about it, but if someone was saying that there should be a baseball league where you're allowed to take all the steroids you want, just like to really see what people are capable of.
Think just road rage getting to the diamond pitch.
Yeah, half the game is just men yelling, "Do you want to go?"
Men with really bad acne.
Yeah, and tiny little balls. Just 15, encourage private industry to develop and support usage of trauma alert implants or technology that notifies emergency crews of extreme trauma. So everyone gets implants that let people know that some sort of trauma has happened, and Zoltan posits that this will significantly reduce domestic violence, crime, and tragedy.
Finally, Minority Report. We're
Yep.
here.
Yep. Well, it's Minority Report a little bit after it happens. It's not Minority Report before it happens.
I also like if transhumanism means I can do whatever the fuck I want to my body, then guess what? You're not putting that implant anywhere near me.
Right, fucking right.
I'm trying to get off the end. Like, I do not want to be found at
Yeah.
all.
Yeah. And finishing it out with 18, free public education from preschool to college.
Yeah, great.
So Zoltan would get a lot of publicity for this.
Financed by the robots.
Right? Not by robots. Robots teaching preschool. God, kids with, oh my God. I'm just picturing the maintenance you would to have with 3 to 4 year olds around a robot.
No.
Like, it's not gonna go well.
No.
And that's how you get the robot uprising and the singularity, and it's just, you got to think through this. Anyway, all right. So Zoltan ends up getting a lot of publicity from his run, but there's one thing that completely kneecapped the Transhumanist Party from making any kind of difference in 2016. Fundamental to the party's founding, they do not accept or raise campaign donations.
The robots do also.
Yeah. Oh my God. Fuck off. So they have no money to put towards things like ballot access or petitioning. So in 2016, Zoltan didn't end up on the ballot anywhere.
Incredible.
And to make things even worse, and he kind of also half endorsed the number of candidates until the election day. So in February 2016, he alluded that he was going to be voting Democrat and said that he's somewhere between a Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders type of guy. By the summer, he was endorsing Libertarian nominee Gary Johnson and would later say that he was actually interviewed by Johnson to be his vice presidential nominee. And then finally, he went to Facebook to say that he was going to be voting him for himself and that people should write in his name. Which is a real issue since most states still require you to file and pay to be a write-in candidate. So in the end, when the votes were counted, Zoltan officially got 95 write-in votes across the country.
I'm shocked and astounding that there were 95 votes.
Yeah, I imagine it was mostly party members, but for someone who, wasn't on the ballot, 95 write-ins is not that bad.
No, yeah. Is this a new record for Gadfly of like lowest number votes?
No, if you remember Gabriel Green, who ran the essentially the UFO party, the number of write-ins he got when he ran for president, I believe, was 8, and then his second total was around 4 or 6.
Oh, that's when mom doesn't even write in the vote name. Yeah.
So 9 days after Election Day in 2016, Zoltan stepped down from leading the party, but stayed on in an advisory. And this means, for the time being, we're diverging off to what happened to the Transhumanist Party in the wake of Zoltan's departure. To fill the leadership role, the party turned to 29-year-old founder of the Nevada chapter of the party and, quote, actuary, science fiction novelist, independent philosophical essayist, poet, amateur mathematician, and composer, Gennady Stalyurov II.
Incredible.
What does amateur mathematician mean? If you use a calculator, are you an amateur mathematician? I don't like it. I don't like it, Una.
Like to doodle with the numbers.
I invented a new number. It's called Threven.
Yeah.
So Gennady has been the editor-in-chief of his own blog since 2002, which would make him 15, called The Rational Argumentator, the motto for which is, quote, "A journal for Western man, championing right reason, rights, and progress." And not a single flag in a red hue was found. I sent this to a mutual on Twitter and I was like, "Hey, what does this make you think?" And it was just like, "Isn't this a white supremacist website? What is this? This person run like one of those Twitter accounts that's just a Roman bust."
It's when you grow up and realize you're mad because the era of Rudyard Kipling is over.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, 100%. It's like, I know your favorite movie is the Boondock Saints. I know you really love Atlas Shrugged. This is just not good. So, because I'm feeling petty, and because it's a realm that we're both very familiar with, in 2007, Gennady wrote a play that you can find on his website called Implied Consent, a play of the sanctity of human life in four acts.
Oh
It's 85 pages, which, gotta say, is the perfect length for a play.
no. That's nice and tight. So I'll give him that.
Anything with no intermission is chef kiss perfect. The problem, though, is it's not written in play format, so it's probably way longer than 85 pages. But there
Oh
are so many monologues on every fucking page. The
no.
dialogue is, for the most part, it's people monologuing at each other. And on top of that, it features a cast of 14 characters, plus an unspecified number of reporters, tax agents, paramedics, mansion guests, and laboratory guards. And Gennady states in the character list that extras should be hired for these roles, and sweet summer child, no. There is not a single fucking theater in the goddamn world that isn't doing musical theater that would touch this. Like, I hate getting so mad about this because everyone should be feel comfortable and safe in their writing. But this is the sort of shit that I know someone told you that
Incredible.
you're writing a screenplay. This isn't a fucking stage play. Fucking God damn it, sir. Get final draft like an adult and fucking write this thing. Fucking pirate it. I don't care. This isn't a fucking play. Oh, would you be surprised that it's unproduced?
No, because it's called implied consent and it's clearly about abortion.
I mean, it's about a guy who wants to live forever and like his progeny trying to figure out how to kill him off or some shit. It's
Oh.
yeah, the
What?
implied consent to live forever.
That's marginally better than what first ran through my head.
Yeah. It's yeah. So this is some very bitchy critique for a play that a guy wrote when he was 20, which, as you know, God forbid anyone sees anything I wrote when I was 20. But
Yeah,
then
fair
they
enough.
mentioned that he wrote this while attending the Christo-Fascist University of Choice, Hillsdale College.
Hillsdale
He went to
College!
fucking Hillsdale and he triple majored because it's a real school. He triple majored in economics, math, just math, and German.
German.
So all that aside, Kennedy has found some acclaim for a children's book he wrote in 2013 called Death is Wrong. Now, it's a bit long for a children's book at 42 pages.
Incredible.
But the gist of the book is that it explains to kids that ultimately death is not supposed to be inevitable, that dying is morally wrong. Dying should never happen. So we should work day in, day out to make sure that dying doesn't happen. There's a kind of jellyfish that never dies, and we could learn from that.
Oh, we are really sorry, I'm just
That's always totally fine. This is a lot to take in.
I know, it's like we have come so far from the teachings of Gilgamesh. We have strayed from the
He was
light.
bummed because his friend died and didn't know how to deal with it. And,
But he dealt with it, and more importantly,
right?
the people who told and retold Gilgamesh learned how to deal with it.
Yeah, except for that fucking, fanfic that came after it. But Gilgamesh could have killed that snake. He was fucking Gilgamesh. And instead, he just let it go.
Sometimes you just gotta let it go.
Seriously. So, in 2018, the New York Times would cite that the Transhumanist Party, under Stolyarov's guidance, had grown to 880 members. And by 2019, Kennedy would oversee the first inter-party primary for the next presidential. And after seven rounds, the party selected Yohanan Ben Zion, the party's vice chairman, to be their presidential candidate. He was selected over electronic musician and performance artist Rachel Haywire, which, just reading her name, I thought that should have been your nominee, because that's it's a rad name. It sounds like he used to be in Mindless Self-Indulgence or some other 2000s dance group. That's fucking cool. And so I figured, like, I might as well look her up, see what she's into. She has a website she runs, triggerwarning.us.
No,
It's a
not even a dot com.
not even a .cc, .us. And it is a fucking cesspit.
Woof.
Recent articles. I did not have to dive into this for more than 2 minutes. Recent articles include Anti-Feminism is the New Feminism,
All right.
mostly railing about how rape culture isn't a thing, written by a woman, mind you.
Yep.
The Psychopath's Case Against Empathy, and an article that Rachel wrote herself, which refers to trigger warnings as cultural Marxism, a term based on anti-Semitic conspiracy theories and is a huge favorite of neo-Nazis and white supremacists. So yeah, fuck clean off, Rach. I hope you never discover immortality, and your music probably sucks.
Wow. Yeah, bullet dodged.
Yeah. So surely Yohanan Ben Zion has got to be better, right?
Yeah.
So despite winning the nomination, the Transhumanist Party got word of a little project that Yohanan was working on at a company called Quixotic Life Sciences, or Quixotic Life Science, whichever you prefer. He'd been working on replicating his own skin cells with the ultimate goal of replicating other parts of his body, particularly muscle. This muscle would be used to create a product that Yohanan called Ben Zion Burgers. He was working on making his own lab-grown human meat for public consumption.
Oh my God, this sounds like an X-Files episode that never aired. Like, I'm into it as a result, but not for the right reasons.
And one of his side projects is he wanted to create lab-grown breast milk, human breast milk, which
Okay.
I can actually see a purpose for that.
Absolutely.
But you really lose the plot when you're like, human burgers, why not? So the Transhumanist Party got word about this and they said, hey, if you go through with this, we're going to kick you off the ticket. And Yohanan responded by going on to Facebook and making a post with a video of him eating his own skin cells.
I mean, what kid hasn't?
I mean,
But
it's just a tiny bit of passive aggressive cannibalism. Throw the first stone. So Ben Zion did say that after eating what was described by some people as a gross-looking brown mess, that he felt rather sick for a day or two after eating it. So it's not really public ready. But you got to start somewhere. And in a swift statement, the Transhumanist Party said, quote, cannibalism of any sort and by any means, including auto-cannibalism, is not tolerated by the U.S. Transhumanist Party. Cannibalism is morally wrong, even when it does not destroy sentient life, since it results in prion diseases and other maladies. studies whose obvious incidents led even pre-scientific peoples to renounce it.
I appreciate a full-throated,
yeah,
like, denial of this person and cannibalism.
I personally think it's the best writing that the party has produced to date. It's really good. So they kicked him off the ballot, but Johanna would say that he actually left the ballot himself because he found the party didn't match with his techno-progressivism. So instead, he decided he would run for the Reform Party nomination that year in 2020.
Oh.
At the Reform Party convention, he got one vote and was defeated by Rocky De La Fuente.
Yay!
He ended up being replaced by a guy named Charlie Cam, who was initially the vice presidential nominee, so he got bumped up. Charlie runs a software company that creates human avatars. I don't know if you've ever seen Live Forever As You Do Now featuring Alan Resnick, but it's very much just a comedy parody of that idea of just like, that's, you know, you can't talk to yourself as an AI.
Excellent.
And that's the ultimate goal. And so Charlie ends up selecting Broadway actress Betsy Parrish, who was in the original production of La Cage aux Folles on Broadway, to be his vice presidential nominee.
Cool.
Yeah, at the time she was like 94.
Wow, that's awesome.
So yeah, so they end up running instead, but since the party was still not raising funds, and this time made no attempt to even get a write-in campaign online, they didn't get a single vote.
Wow.
Yeah. As for Zoltan, he ran a couple more times and has bounced around a couple parties in the meantime. In 2018, he joined the Libertarian Party in order to run for governor of California. He ran on a tech-heavy regulation-cutting platform that awarded him 14,000 votes and a 15th place finish. In 2019, he left the Libertarian Party to join the Republican Party and ran as president against Donald Trump. He stated the ultimate choice for this was that, quote, transhumanism is being overrun by socialists in a politically correct culture devoid of risk and objectivity. So, you know, still a cool guy.
Great. Wow.
So even with a few Republicans challenging Donald Trump's renomination, Zoltan finished a dismal seventh place with, once again, 14,000 votes. To date, this is the last attempt that Zoltan made for public office. And since then, he's written just, I think, about 7 volumes of essays that you can buy in a bound set. He bought a third vineyard, this one in Napa Valley, California. And he's continued writing articles, most recently for Newsweek. He wrote an article about how the Air Force refused to let him join because he was too old and that the U.S. Armed Forces are practicing ageism.
And if only he could live for forever.
I know, right? Yeah, it's going to be a huge problem if, you know, immortal people can't join the military, which the thing I find really, really funny is in early bits of his platform, he's anti-war and says we declare war against diseases. So why the fuck would you want to join the Air Force if life is that precious to you?
He could be in a plane. That would be cool.
I mean,
he's conquered the sea. He's conquered wine growing land. Now he must conquer the air and the sky is above.
The sky is the air. Sorry, the sky is the sea of the air. Sorry, my brain shut down trying to say that. And as of right now, he's currently working on bottling his first wine out of Mendoza. Zoltan, you came so fucking close. Don't fucking do this. You will lose all of your fucking money.
Incredible.
And this year, he should earn his master's degree in philosophy from Oxford.
Ooh.
And as for the Transhumanist Party, they're still trucking on. Back in May, they held a vote for their 2024 ticket. Only 2 people ran, so they both got to be president and vice president. The presidential nominee is a guy named Tom Ross, who has, honestly, a really impressive resume. Most of his life he's spent as a creative director for various companies and for his own company. He spent 10 years as the creative director for Odyssey, which used to be radio.com. In 2001, he spoke in a congressional hearing in favor of an anti-spam bill and was named as the private sector co-chair of that subcommittee. And this campaign might also have a much clearer plan for getting votes in general. In March, he wants to focus on getting the party on the Colorado ballot, which is one of the easiest states that you can get on the ballot if you're a third party.
Yeah,
they're actually going to raise money for it, too.
Oh, okay. So good job.
Party. In August, they're going to spend all their time getting on as many write-in ballots as they can and spreading the word on how to vote for write-in candidates. Their platform is split into 3 parts. There's initiatives for Earthlings, AI, and extraterrestrials, which I should add, party bylaws say that if aliens ever show up, they are allowed to join the Transhumanist Party.
Okay, so win in the favor of transhumanism.
So the platforms include various ideas such as encouraging people to monetize their hobbies on Etsy and YouTube, navigating a clear plan for AI rights, and creating a public plan for the arrival of extraterrestrials, which includes mitigating public panic and establishing intergalactic trade.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, all fine ideas.
Why not?
Might as well have a plan.
Go for it.
Then there's this. Tom is in the midst of writing a series of books that he calls the US 6 Hexology. The Hexology is apparently a series of six books, I
Okay.
guess. He's written three so far, and he states that he is writing the book specifically for artificial intelligence and to convince AI to fight child exploitation online, which, citation needed.
Yeah.
He also states, quote, "The approach I devised, Mythematics, uses autobiographical fiction, myth, and math. It was later discovered to have intriguing effects on certain human readers. As a result, a year-long human clinical study was conducted to monitor 33 human readers who reported an uptick in consciousness phenomena such as synchronicities, dreams related to the book, and mental defragging." Citation fucking needed. He doesn't list the study. People dream about the shit they read, my dude. This is 33 is not enough to prove shit. You need at least over 100 if you're going to do this. It needs to be peer fucking reviewed, Thomas. But then it gets fucking worse because when you look at the summaries of the three books that have already been written, they're not about child exploitation. They're like about a weird American Civil War that takes place in the future, but also the present.
Oh no.
And like, for a book series that's so anti-child exploitation, the advertising on Tom's website is best summed up as it like, what if an AI art generator was really horny for nuns and also had a Suicide Girls account that it doesn't tell anyone about? It is horny AI. You shouldn't make your AI horny to fight child exploitation, especially, all right, one of the advertisements says, "Hey, you know that niece that scares you a little bit? She would really love this book." And the AI is like, tattooed legs and like a school skirt down to a certain part, and is like, "This is sexual of a niece who I'm assuming is a child or at least a teen." Like, the fuck are you doing, Thomas? I don't know how these books could possibly cause anything. I don't know how these books could fight child exploitation online when even the FBI is still having trouble doing that. Like, AI is having trouble saying basic facts correct. It makes up legal precedent. It can't fight child exploitation, you motherfucker.
It is at best a tool. And I feel like that's what angers me so much, especially with this whole idea of like, oh yeah, and then AI will have rights. It's like AI is not, you're thinking about AI the wrong way, the way that will get us into trouble and the way that like resulted in a writer's strike.
Yeah, and also, have you seen Terminator? It's like we're not. Humans barely treat humans well. We are not going to treat robots, AI, cyborgs. We are not going to treat them well at all.
Oh no, I get any of my cousins drunk and they start screaming at Alexa, like literally screaming at her.
Like, I've joked that if I ever become like a weird boomer in my old age, it's going to be me screaming, "No child of mine's going to marry a robot." And like, you joke about it, but I could easily see people being like, "Well, that's my fucking line, apparently. That's like my old racist grandpa line." And it's like, what you're saying this thing will do is not matching up. And I want to read that study. I want to see who conducted that study. I want to see who was involved. I want to see which books they read. I want to see if they read about, like, book two is literally a horny nun. It's like a just, oh my God, it's just whatever. Whatever. I'm getting worked up over a book that like barely anyone's read that I assure you is not fighting child exploitation and is.
The best worst part about all of this is Thomas, it sounds like he's painted himself into a corner of like a iRobot version of Lolita,
Oh
where
no.
like Humbert Humbert, like the whole point of Lolita is it's like he's like an, a bad narrator. It's the that's the thing. Humbert Humbert very much believes that he was saving Dolores, and that's why he took her in the car and killed her. Spoiler alert, killed Dolores's mom, and then they start running
Debatable,
off. And but
It's
like no,
like
Humbert Humbert is like whatever is that phrase of like that I'm totally blanking on,
unreliable
but
narrative.
unreliable narrator, exactly. And I just feel like Tom is now just like, I'm saving like children on the internet by writing this incredibly horny fan fiction.
I do not look forward to Humbert Squared. That is going
Yes,
to ruin the
exactly.
internet.
Oh my God.
Fuck.
Dusty, I think we're on to something.
No, I'm not going to super prison. I am not going to make a horny AI based off of parts from Yahoo Messenger. It's fuck. And that's where I end. That's where we have to end because that's where we fucking are now. I have no idea what to think. This book shit threw me through a fucking loop. It seems like all this party has really produced are self-published novels that, by summary alone, sound like masturbatory nonsense. It's.
So much of it just feels like captured an amber vision of the future from the year that Hackers came out.
100%.
This,
Yes.
it, like so many of the platforms of the party feel like, sure, yeah, if 9/11 had never happened, I guess we could worry about this shit.
Yep. Yeah. It's just wild because I definitely agree. Like, if we can figure out ways, to eradicate disease and lead that to us living longer, sure. Are we biologically capable of living longer? Absolutely not. It's like,
Like, and you'd also consider the fact that it's like we are absolutely living longer, like so much longer. In fact, my friends and I were watching the Bills game yesterday. Like, we were talking about the age of the players, and we're like, I started to wonder, of like, well, yeah, do like when do players retire? And do we not think of it because just a like couple decades ago, people were still smoking a lot, and so you just like die before the neurological diseases could get you. Like, it's, I think I'm sure there are several articles about this, but it's the fact that like you eradicate a bunch of diseases so you can live longer, but then guess what? Now you have other diseases
Right. Yeah.
because you're living longer.
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's we live longer because we wash hands and don't get diphtheria as much. And
Yeah.
but I mean, yeah, like you said, we also have to deal with diseases that are just ignoring antibiotics and are
Yeah.
evolving, changing. And just look at fucking COVID. COVID is consistently changing because that's what it's designed to fucking do. And
Or
not
like,
designed as in man-made it. It's like the
yeah.
design of being a fucking virus.
Sure, or like I'm less likely to die in childbirth, but I'm also
Right.
much more likely to have dementia before I
Right.
die.
100 fucking percent. Like, I don't want you guys to invent immortality but ignore curing things like Alzheimer's.
Right.
We still don't even really know what causes Alzheimer's. I don't it's just wild. It's all fucking wild. But it does I think it goes right back to what that one anti-transhumanist said, where it's like it is pure escapism. It's
Yeah.
ignoring a lot of problems that are right in front of us that are far more important for this dream of living to be 200 with a robot heart and somehow your skin still being okay and
Right.
your
Or your
mind still being
brains
just as
in the
strong.
cloud.
Right. And it's just, I mean, I get how in theory it sounds great. And, San Junipero is still the happiest
Right.
Black Mirror episode, but it's still kind of fucked.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a thing that I really worry works more as a thing of science fiction or as a narrative device, and in the interim is just more of a waste of time. And but if it leads people to want to cure disease and to fix that, that's kind of what you have to do if you want people to live forever. Because I mean, disease will always find a way, viruses will always evolve, and that's just kind of how it works. So I don't know. Maybe people should just be less cyberpunk and more like, the elves and Lord of the Rings. Just like, if you can live forever, move to the woods, make music, be lithe and quiet.
Like, yeah, could we as a society learn how to grieve? That could
Right.
also be really
Right.
good.
Maybe, I don't know. Don't tell children that death is wrong so that when someone dies, you're like, oh, were
So
they
bad.
terrible people? If I suddenly get a disease as a child and it's terminal, am I a bad person? Like, what the fuck? Just make death comfortable. If you can, allow people death with dignity, medical assistance in death, whatever that means. Just fuck. Just fuck.
Yeah.
I don't know. Any other thoughts?
Mean, I'm just gonna watch Gattaca after this, so
Gattaca. Gattaca.
no.
I've actually never seen Gattaca. I've heard it's amazing.
I
I don't know. I'm gonna watch that
saw it
in.
once when I was 14 and it was in the theaters.
I'm gonna watch that In Time movie where time is a currency and it says how many minutes you have in life, and Justin Timberlake's in it, and some people live forever
What?
because they can just buy time and live forever, man.
What? But and yet this sounds like it won't be enough of a commentary on our capitalist society.
I mean, it kind of is, but it's also an action movie starring Justin Timberlake
Hell yeah.
and Johnny Galecki from Big Bang Theory.
Wow.
Yeah,
Yeah. You
he
tell me
plays.
how that goes.
Yeah, he, well, I spoiler alert: Johnny Galecki drinks away all of his time and dies because you pay for things
Jesus.
in time. You get to like a toll booth and you pay 5 minutes because time is money.
Really? Yeah. Really throwing a lamp on that one.
Yep. All right. So anyway, thank you for joining us this week. I promise soon we're gonna get to Eugene Debs because I promised that back in December, but shit just started happening, man. So we'll get
Right.
to it eventually. But you know what? In the meantime, I guess we'll live forever and we'll see you
Oh my
next
God.
time on Gadfly. Don't make Humbert. Don't make Humbert Humbert into AI. Please let that be the
No,
last
but I
word.
love Humbert Squared, the cyberpunk
God.
retelling of Lolita.
Gadfly is a production of Added Serotonin. Our episodes are edited by Brianna Valentine of Rem Alternus Productions. Our theme song is Sophomore Makeout by Silent Partner, and you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at GadflyPod.
Ready to level up your cosplay game? Check out the Geek Forge on Etsy. With a variety of props to give your photos that extra spark, you'll find just what you need. Hold magical fire in the palm of your hand, or take a potion to restore your mana. With a large variety of colors, you can choose your own magical flavor for your cosplay. Bring drama to your photo shoots with these vibrant props and more, all available at the Geek Forge. Are you ready to level up your cosplay?